Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
Did you like that dead air there? That was my fault. I'd like to blame someone else because I always prefer to blame someone else.
Oh, sure.
I know. Especially my wife, but I was supposed to say, this portion of the show is sponsored by Jerry Kelly Heating and Air Conditioning. Don't forget, we have a Thursday edition of Sue's News coming up in the next hour. And then our new friend from the BBC, Paul Coletti, will kind of explain why the BBC is in town. Brian Kilmeade is on the horn with us this afternoon, the co-host of Fox and Friends. You hear his show every morning here on 97.1 FM Talk. Mr. Kilmeade, how are you this afternoon?
What's going on, Mark?
I just became a grandfather today, so that's my breaking news. My son in Houston just had a baby at 3 a.m. this morning. Actually, his girlfriend, just to be clear.
Well, how great is that? There's nothing better than news when you wake up to that.
It is exactly what I woke up to, for sure. So that was great news. Well, listen, I want to talk about some things that are going on in your world. I know you interviewed Bibi today, and we'll talk about Trump. But, Brian, I just spent some time here in the monologue reading some of the information we now know about this 14-year-old kid in Georgia. And the things, I'm not going to say that law enforcement ignored this, because they clearly, we now know they investigated this in the spring of last year. But some of this is rather stunning that we're finding out. There were red flags everywhere.
I mean, the fact the FBI last year met him, you know, met with him, and he denied. They said, well, what's going on? There's a threat coming from the school, from this game, these gamers. So, yeah, this one kid is threatening to shoot up a school. They wouldn't see him because that's not me, and they let him go. Now, we had Paul Morrow on today. He said, like, you really don't have much of a choice. I'm like, I don't get it. What do you mean you don't have much of a choice? He goes, well, he's 13 years old. He's a minor.
Yeah.
And it's an allegation. It's a statement. But then again, I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. But so what? He's 13. And it's the forensics. I mean, forensics could unmask somebody using a phone in a cave in Afghanistan. If you're talking to the kid, you know it's him. You know he's lying to you. So as a non-policeman, non-investigator, I'm perfectly willing to be corrected. But if you're in the guy's, if you're talking to the kid and he denies it, you know that he did it. So
yeah.
What is stopping you from putting him in some type of detention? That's the same thing, if I remember correctly, in Buffalo. They knew this kid was nuts. They knew he was going to kill people. But the next thing you know, they talk to him. They were watching him. He ends up heading up to Buffalo. He's a racist and starts shooting people randomly in a mall who happen to be black. That happened. It's probably easily for people to forget, but that happened probably 3 years ago now.
Right. Well, and even Audrey Hale, and you know, the manifesto got released this week in Tennessee for the Audrey Hale thing. I don't know how many people were dialed into what she was going through, but she was in severe mental distress, and she was 28 years old, and there should have been people around her that would have been, you know, aware of that, and apparently they weren't, or nobody reported that.
The same thing. What I like to do, it was my suggestion today, is I like to talk, instead of saying the FBI sucks, which they don't, what do you need, guys? What do you need? How could I empower investigators, police, to take action? You know, the red flag laws, I was talking to people today, two of which are very conservative. The red flag laws have worked in Florida. They said, well, the Second Amendment, you're going to be taking away my guns. My ex-wife's mad at me. He's going to say I got threatened. I'm threatening her so because they know I love to shoot, I love to hunt, so I'll take my guns away. Yeah, there's always a risk of people making things up to get you back. I got it. But the red flag laws are working with very little abuse in Florida, and that's a conservative state, as everybody knows. So I'm just wondering, what do they need to be able to stop that 13-year-old before he shoots people at 14.
Well, this is where the conversation should really head, everything you just said, because, of course, yesterday the first thing that comes out of KJP's mouth is about guns, and, you know, you see that even locally here with politicians trying to virtue signal. But I think you have some pretty serious issues that you can dial in on and try to come up with solutions for.
Yeah, I mean, number one is, and I talked to Cornyn, he took a lot of heat He did some, I thought, common sense reform. Sorry about some idiots on my block.
That's okay.
But he did some common sense. He did some common sense, along with some other Republicans, gun reforms. And a lot of people, a lot of conservatives upset by it. But they really didn't do anything wrong. I thought he looked at what was going on in his state. How do we prevent that? What could we do? And he made some minor adjustments. And they were really happy. Senator Murphy, who's big in Connecticut ever since Sandy Hook, said, you know, I'm really pleased Republicans came to work with me. So what does he do? The second time, this is the second big shooting under Biden, and both times he goes, Republicans won't come down and use common sense laws when it comes to guns. What are you talking about? Will you at least salute them when they come across, when one party comes across the line? Don't abuse them and make them feel like as if they were, you know, patsies for your agenda.
Yeah, that's disappointing. But I guess in this political environment, not surprising whatsoever. Brian Kilmeade back with us this afternoon. I'm not sure that I can properly and accurately summarize what the hell is going on with Hunter Biden today, because it's been somewhat confusing. But what's your take on this? And is it an Alford plea? Is he pleading guilty? Will Joe Biden pardon him? I think that part is kind of obvious at this point, even though he says no.
Well, look, the guy's guilty. He doesn't pay any taxes, did coke. He was flagrant about it. Put it in a laptop that we all were told it was fake, but the audience listening, our audiences, knew it was not a fake laptop. The President Biden knew it wasn't a fake laptop. In it was a how-to guide to find out that Hunter Biden never paid taxes on any of this information. What was going to be revealed is that Joe Biden was all over, profited from it to the tune of maybe $20, $30 million. That's where we're heading. You know, Hunter Biden addicted to drugs, abusing it as a privileged kid, who thought, I could do anything, I'm going to get away with everything, who's an addict, is thankfully, it seems he's not now, although we don't know whose cocaine that was in the White House. So now he's called out on it. He basically knows, you got me dead to rights. As I've heard legal experts say in our channel, told me personally, he's got 3 years in prison if this case just goes to trial. 3 years. He's guilty. So now he knows his dad's going to pardon him. So what are you wasting everyone's time for? I like to see the whole thing go to trial, and we'll find out where the money is.
Right, which is why I always kind of expected that it wouldn't go to trial. And I can't see any scenario where he's not going to get a pardon. I think that that's what today is all about.
Exactly.
Why lie to us then, Mark?
Yeah.
Why lie to us? They just said the press secretary yesterday, say there's nothing changes.
Right.
You know, commute, exonerate, pardon. Are they going to use semantics and think we're morons again?
No, but Brian, the president's been fine the last 3 years. There's no cognitive dissonance. There's nothing like that. Nothing to see here. He's not going to drop out of the race either, just so you know. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Unless God Almighty comes down,
right.
or Nancy Pelosi, who's got more power.
Apparently so. All right. Hey, you interviewed Bibi Netanyahu, and you asked him about this report about a ceasefire deal.
It's accurate.
No, it's exactly inaccurate. There's a story, a narrative out there. There's a deal out there. In fact, while we agreed in May and July and in August to a deal and to an American proposal, Hamas has consistently said no to every one of them.
So that's counter to the narrative that we're hearing, that they may be close to a deal. What other takeaways from that chat this morning, Brian?
Well, number one, I talked to him before we went on and after, and he basically said this. I asked him the question, too. People say that you're delaying a deal to delay your own political career, because as soon as this is over, you're done. He said,
right.
Absolutely not. And that's never been the scenario. I actually think that's one of the lowest things you could tell anyone. But this is the common scenario, the common jargon that goes on back and forth. So I just thought I'd ask him, let him punt it. And he didn't get insulted by it. He goes, you got to be kidding me. I don't want to extend my political career one extra day. Number two, my other takeaway was he's not leaving that corridor. Who would? You have dozens of tunnels that were discovered, some of which you get tractor trailers down. Egypt let it happen. That was my next question, was going to be, how much blame does Egypt get? Iran supplied the material. Egypt supplied the access. Gaza was the place. And the people, the Palestinians, are the one paying the price, because most of Hamas stays in the tunnels with the hostages, who obviously were being tortured. As this woman, his body was found, she was 76 pounds. 76 pounds.
Oh, my.
She's a full adult. Can you imagine what her life was like, her last 300 days?
Yeah.
And the guy?
That is absolutely horrible. Did you ask Netanyahu if he feels that there would be a dramatic difference in what the U.S. might do if there's a different person in the White House, or if he felt like this White House and this administration was wavering a little bit?
Two things that I said to him. I said, how much how much harder did the negotiations get when President Biden said Benjamin Netanyahu is not doing everything he can to get a deal done? And he says, well, that's up to Hamas to find out. For me, I just got to do my job. We know we made it harder because we saw him rant. Number two, he also says that I cannot reward Hamas for killing six people by coming in easier with my terms and conditions. That is the deal. If they want to end this, they could end this tomorrow by surrendering. That is it. So to me, more defiant than ever, because I know he knows he's right. I know he's right. I also spoke to a woman today who's a member of the IDF, whose brother's in for his fourth tour in 300 days, fourth tour. All these people are not professional soldiers. Right. They get drafted like you and I would if we lived over there. And she's probably 24. She's been in twice. Now she's working for a private organization, armored vehicles that could get these guys in and out of war zones when they're injured. Imagine that. So, and remember, Israel's the size of New Jersey. That's it. That's a country. So she was telling me, too, that, you know, we're getting worn out. Life is not like this ever in her life. She's never seen it. She's born in Britain but grew up there. And she says everybody feels they're in a war footing. Everybody.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Buddy.
Well, let me shift to politics here and just get your thoughts. I know Trump had a town hall. I was listening to him today. He did this economic policy speech, and I can't help. This is just an observation, and I said this to Fred earlier, Brian. I said, let's take the issues out of it and just look at the optics, because I see Kamala Harris. She's smiling. Maybe she's cackling, but she has energy. I see Trump up there, and when he's teleprompter Trump, it just doesn't play so well. He looks old. He looks older than he did when he was running against Biden. So what are your anticipations for what might happen on Tuesday night?
Well, number one, I liked it. It was actually full of substance in front of business people who he needs to support, and then he needs them to enact. So then he sit there and took questions against the finest businessmen in the country. Now, I know Kudlow was up there and Scott Bessent, who's been a guest and probably Treasury Secretary if Trump wins. There were people up there that he knew, but people in the audience he didn't, and he's taking questions.
A lot of questions,
so,
yes.
That's pretty cool, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's like going into a locker room full of football coaches, giving a speech on how to coach football, and then taking questions from those great coaches. So he knew that these guys are coming at him at a high level. This isn't a bunch of supporters like we were in the audience with Sean last night. Nothing wrong with both scenarios, but it's just a fact. So I don't have, like, in a way, Mark, you're not wrong, but if you're smiling all the time, I feel like you're acting.
Oh, she's acting. Yeah, there's no doubt that she's acting. I'm just saying, like, from a perception standpoint right now, and by the way, I'll say this, because I listened to the speech and then I listened to most of the Q&A. He was better with the Q&A because he seems, you know, these stump speeches, they get repetitive. He seems less interested when he goes off the page. And this, by the way, used to happen in 2016 and 2020 as well. But I do think that we're going to be in a period here where the momentum has stalled for Harris, and then we'll see if it turns around next week. There's certainly an opportunity for Trump now.
No question. And I'll be talking about that this weekend. I got Stephen Miller on. I got the Ruthless podcast on. And I'll talk about that with Kayleigh McEnany, who worked with him before to get him really great debates and speeches, and was actually a CNN contributor in 2016. And 2020, she was back working with him. So she knows what it's like, and he knows when he prepares. And she's got some, she's going to work some sources tonight and tomorrow in order to get some information. I talked to Kelsey Gabbard, says he's already preparing. And I talked to her before the interview, and I said, listen, what exactly are you doing? Because what I'm doing is bringing some heat to him. But we sit. We don't stand. We don't act. I don't pretend to be Kamala Harris. I tell him exactly what her record is, and I tell him exactly how she's going to attack back and attack him. So I go, how do you feel? He goes, he feels confident, and he should. He's ready. And I said, okay.
Yeah, that'll be good. It'll be interesting. The big story, maybe one of the big stories around here, I know you're like a soccer guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. We have our soccer here, but, you know, opening night of the NFL season, the Chiefs and the Ravens tonight, the Packers from the exless Brazil against the Eagles tomorrow night. Brian, I am pumped and ready. You like football, though, like American-style football, don't you?
I can't wait. It's going to be great. But to me, the most interesting thing, and I'm a Giant fan, but the most interesting thing is, can Aaron Rodgers, at 41, take a talented team back to the playoffs?
Yeah, I know.
You saw what Jordan Love did. I know it's the Packers. I'm not a Packer guy, but I'm not anti-Packer. Fascinated by their success and sustainability. Now with their third quarterback, because with the team I'm from, forget it. The Giants, that we even the last 5 years with Eli Manning was useless. So I look forward to that. I mean, I look forward to the season. I like the analysis. I never get bored with it. I look forward to Tom Brady in the booth. I think that's going to be great.
I'm curious about how that's going to go. Yeah, that'll be interesting for sure.
I think, well, where it is, he's got all his notebooks from every game. So from every game he played, he would make notes after the game too. So he's bringing that all to the fray. So it's going to be interesting because he does not want to be treated like a six-time Super Bowl champ. By all accounts, he goes in there very humble like a rookie, and he's really pumped up to get into it. So he don't expect him to be perfect because he's not expecting it.
Yeah, there's going to be a ramp up.
To correct his mistakes.
Look, there's a lot of hatred out there for Tom Brady. I love the guy. I love the fire that he brings to, you know, competition, and, you know, his record is unbelievable. So I hope he's a good broadcaster. Look, I'm in the camp that loves Tony Romo. I think Romo does a great job on the broadcast, but some people don't like him. By the way, did you watch on the NFL front, before I let you go, did you watch the in-season Hard Knocks with the Giants, Brian?
Loved it.
It was great.
It.
Yeah.
Did you? Yeah. I talked to the general manager of the Giants. I said, how do you feel? He goes, I'm so glad it's over.
Yeah.
He said, yeah. He goes, I got a bow back on it. Saquon stuff was not great for us, but everybody wanted us to do it. They told us to do it. I told them this is a scenario. I told them these are going to be real conversations, and that's what they did. So he said, I'm the first, and let's just hope that I have a good season now. Now everybody knows who we are.
Yeah.
What about for your family? And his family was with him. He says his family loved it.
I loved it. I just like what they do on Hard Knocks because it, you know, humanizes these NFL players. They did it with Netflix on receiver and, you know, when they did quarterback last year, and we're ready to go for the NFL season. Killmeat, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
And don't forget One Nation Saturday night at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock here in St. Louis. Check it out, One Nation with Brian Killmeat. You'll hear him tomorrow morning here on 97.1 FM Talk. Hang in there. We're coming back.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.